reflected signal, or many times reflected signal, that is, that lost 70 or 80% of its power, still goes somewhere. But if you have a half of a watt, you might not be that successful. Back to you.
Okay, but it might go farther into outer space, which doesn't really get you anywhere. And probably this would be a nice time to mention maximum usable frequency, because a lot of amateur radio screens publish those calculations, and that's probably very close to the whole point of the exercise. There are some frequencies below the maximum usable frequency that have skywave propagation and refraction, and so if you put more power in it, it'll just keep reflecting and refracting up and down, back and forth. Whereas if you transmit on a frequency above the maximum usable frequency, increasing the power is going to have no effect, because it's not going to refract back to the Earth. It's going to go into outer space, and you'll spend just more money having a more energized emission going to, you know, Alpha Centauri.
Thank you very much for that, Intuition. And the last one. When I was younger, every radio that I bought, I had to unscrew it and look inside, because I was curious, how is that done? And there is a video that I have sent you, tooltip. It's number 411, then it's tooltip, colon. Not all Phillips screws are created equal. So that would be GIS versus Phillips screws and drivers. So GIS is a Japanese standard. And what happened is we are using Phillips screwdriver or tip on the any tool that allows us to unscrew it like a screw gun. Then we may strip it. You just spent a lot of money to have your own radio, the beautiful ones, especially those for $6,000-$7,000, and you want to look just once, look inside, and then you see that you just ruined the screws. It doesn't look any longer like the one that came with. That video is by one of the very much known ham radio operators, and she talks about GIS versus Phillips screws and drivers. And there is a shape, profile and angle difference for the GIS screws. So actually, if you have a Japanese screw from your radio and the proper screwdriver for it, or tip for the screw gun, that screw sits on it. You don't have to hold it. When you use the Phillips screwdriver, it will go most likely go down, go out. Now, even if you have it magnetic, unless it's very strongly magnetic, and some of the screws are not really made from the ferromagnetic material. The tip for those who want to look inside his radio. Back to you, Dr. Roy. Thank you very much. And to XGN.
Okay. Well, Phillips screws, as far as I'm aware, were the first of that kind of configuration. I think it was invented in around 1932. I think it has something to do with car mechanics. I forget if it was Ford or someone wanted a screw head that was more efficient than the old slotted version. The thing that you're talking about is the Japanese manufacturers developed a standard that was similar but not identical to Phillips screws. It had a slightly different taper. It was JIS. is the organization. And I've regularly advised people to, especially nowadays, there are a lot of screwdrivers that come with interchangeable heads, and it's very inexpensive to buy a set of JIS screw head, and it will lessen the chance of you screwing up the head by forcing a JIS on a Phillips or a Phillips on a JIS. So yeah, it does exist out there. I'm sure a lot of people have heard of it. If you guys out there didn't, if you're into disassembling Japanese manufactured equipment, go to Amazon and do a search for JIS screw heads and buy a couple. They're surprisingly inexpensive.
Thank you very much for it. Yes, definitely I have to order one because I don't have it. And I believe there are sets in Home Depot. They have a different angle, but I'm not sure about it. Definitely a few bucks for the tip or for the screwdriver, JIS system will help. And on that video, that ham radio operator who makes that video says, look, and he shows, look, this is what happens when you have improper a screwdriver for those screws. So if you don't want to strip it or you don't want to damage the screws, so when time comes to sell the radio, somebody says, hey, somebody open up that. Buy it. Thank you very much. That's all for today, tonight, and to XM.
AC2GS. Okay, thank you, Wesley, as always. I appreciate it. Is there anyone else want to put their name on our little list for tonight? Otherwise, we're going to have a relatively short technical net. So I give you once again the option to put your name down, either science and technology or amateur radio-related questions, comments, or topics.
November 2, Zulu Charlie.
Hello there, John. How you doing?
All good, Roy. I'm a little late to the party here. I'm down in South America, the country of Colombia, and I forgot about the 1 hour time difference. I took a nap. I actually set the alarm. I was looking forward to hearing the AI dissertation. Yeah, a lot, you know, going on with everything. And I set the alarm. I got up. Yeah, I took a nap in the afternoon. Had a great day out at the park. Some exercise. Really good. And then I hear Leslie on there, and I realized right away. So back to you.
Okay, very good. There wasn't a lot of particularly interesting news about artificial intelligence. Again, I think that Elon has basically stolen all the magic smoke with his IPO, which concerns me personally a great deal. Some people are much kinder to Elon. This just kind of strikes me as an incredible grift. Where having transferred his debt to debt services all over the world and saturated them, he finagled the powers that be to allow him his IPO, and he's transferring his debt to the average man out there who's going to have to pay for it, because it's always the average schmo who has to pay all this.
No, I agree. I'm watching it all, and some of it in that disbelief. The market is up and down, and, as we discussed already, you know, you see some news, but you think, wow, here it comes, but then it shoots back up. There's some technical difficulty. You came in and out there, and when I first logged on, I heard you talk about something. Is the difficulty in the repeater? the technical difficulty? Is it on your side? Is it in the EchoLink with me? What's going on tonight?
Yeah, it's just sometimes the mixer on my end screws up, and unfortunately you have to reboot the whole computer, and because a lot of things run on my computer, it's not a simple, you know, 10-second deal. So I was trying to maneuver around it unsuccessfully, and then I switched back to the old-fashioned RF method. So it should be fine now.
Yeah, I don't know if you can hear me, Roy. That last transmission was pretty unaudible. I don't know, so I don't know if it's just you or if it's everybody.
Okay, well, unfortunately, I can't really tell you. I can only tell you what it looks like from this end. From this end, I'm getting, it sounds reasonable. So, again, not quite sure what's going on. This should be straight RF. It should have nothing to do with, when it gets to Glen Oaks and such and connects to the other repeaters and All-Star and such, all kinds of things can go wacky. But as far as I'm concerned, it's just, going into RF and going down to the repeater end.
Again, I don't know if you're hearing me. I was hearing you and Leslie pretty good there, just a few moments ago. So, I'll wait and see if you can hear me. If it clears up, I'll come back. I had a little news to share. But I'll be on the side here listening. H2GS, HK, November 2, Zulu Charlie.
Okay, John. By the way, I heard everything that you said.
Yeah, Roy.
Again, I don't know if you hear me. I know you're transmitting, and I hear a voice, but it's totally inaudible.
Okay, and I don't know what's causing it.
Yeah, Roy, it sounds like something happened to your RF link. Perhaps you can come directly through Echo Link if you can't switch radios, WB2BX.
Well, it's kind of difficult the way all this is hooked up together, and it's not really behaving well. So I'm trying to stay out of my computer's mixer that was causing some problems. So I'm just using the regular. I mean, for all intents and purposes, this doesn't involve too much the computer. I have my microphone and my headphone plugged into my IC 7300, and that's about it. The only thing is the audio output is going into the computer to just record the audio stream. And I'm looking at the waveform, and the waveform looks reasonably normal, so I don't think there's any kind of problem, going back into from the radio, but I can't tell you, and I can't really switch too many things around without reintroducing the mixer that was causing the problem in the first place.
Roy, your audio is largely unintelligible. If you're going through a radio, it sounds like your radio is off frequency, like you hit the 5KC switch. Or something along those lines. I don't know if you can switch inputs or switch radios or just come directly through EchoLink or All-Star or something like that. Go ahead, because you really have no intelligible audio. Go ahead.
No, the radio's on, 146-850, so I don't know what to tell you again. Let me get a more local check. Anyone listening in Selden, can you give me a transmission check?
Did your power drop then? It sounds a little distorted, so it's almost like you're off frequency. But you may have also, we're talking about running a final amp before. It sounds almost like you lost your amplifier. Or maybe your radio went from the 25-watt to the 1-watt position or something like that. Go ahead.
Haven't touched the front end of the radio. It's been sitting here doing what it usually does. So I don't know what to tell you. Once again, let me just check, because I haven't heard from anyone other than Echolink and All-Star. Anyone in Selden hear me? Please give me a transmission check.
100% noise. Suggest passing it to the SpaceNet.
Okay. What about Glen Oaks? Anyone hear me in Glen Oaks?
Let's see. Is there anybody else going on a radio, so to speak, directly into the repeater? Because I think somebody who's talking on 8.5 directly. Go ahead. Let's see if it's a problem on the input. WB2BX.
I'm going in on 8.5. You're 100% audible. Roy is 100% noise. AC2PL. Tell him.
Okay, so the last station did not get a call sign. You said you're on the, you're on 146.25 on the actual repeater input, and you're being heard fine, so it doesn't sound like it's a repeater problem. Anyway, Roy, I guess I'll take a standby and see if you're in at control and see if you can get an intelligible signal back on here. WB2BXO.
Well, like I told you before, I don't know what's going on. I'm it looks clean from here. I don't know where it's going bad. I can't switch back to All-Star because All-Star introduces the mixer and the mixer introduces the problem. So, I don't know. Things seem quiet anyway tonight. I say I think we'll just kind of jump over to Paul WS2N with the SpaceNet report, and at my leisure I will putter around with this setup and see what might be causing the problems, because right now it's not obvious, and it's not really a flexible kind of setup where you just click a button or two and you've changed to a completely different setup. Paul, do you want to do the SpaceNet report?
ABC2GS WS2N, you're starting to make a comeback a little bit, so I'm not sure what's going on. You just started to make a comeback for it, just to let you know. Yeah, we'll do the report, but I don't know. Do you want to try one more transmission? For some reason, you were just starting to be understandable. You know, I mean, for the last 5 minutes, I didn't understand anything, but I did hear you turn it over to me. Back to you, Roy.
Okay, we'll give it another try. Again, I'm not really doing much of anything. I'm just kind of staring at the screen, trying to figure out what might or might not be happening here.
You're back to being pretty unintelligible, so I'm not sure what's going on. Anyway, Roy, I'll take it for a while. This is WS2N for the SpaceNet report for the TechNet, and we'll stand by intermittently for Roy. Maybe he can figure out a way, you know, a plan B or something. Let me drop it. Okay. I just have a couple of topics I'll go through. I don't know if you guys remember the Pegasus missions from years ago. Pegasus is a rocket that they would attach to an L-1011, which was a jumbo jet built by Lockheed years ago. You know, they want to compete with the 747s. Well, this is the only one that's left, and NASA still has it. And they're going to launch a rocket to try to bring back to life the Swift telescope that's up there. Swift is supposed to be at around, I think, 325 miles. It's dropped about 75 miles over the last year or so, starting to get lower and lower. So they need to reboost it to try to save it. Yeah, Swift is a telescope. They could quickly look in any direction. And, you know, if there's a gamma ray burst or something. So they want to save it, you know, from the from actually deorbiting. It should have been at 373, and it's down to around 250 miles. So if it keeps coming down, there will be no more Swift telescope. So this mission is to try to get up to it, and they plan on launching this on the L-1011 June 29th, which is coming up. And I'll report to see if they're able to save it. Got some kind of a docking equipment or something. It's going to try to push the satellite to a higher orbit. I haven't seen that configuration yet, but I'll look into it. Any comments?
WB2BX.
You might remember Virgin Mobile tried to do something like this. They developed a rocket that would be attached to the bottom of the 747. And they tried a couple of times. It was really unsuccessful. The last time they tried it, they launched from England. It would have been the first time anything took off from England that actually made it into space. But that didn't work out, so Virgin Mobile gave up that idea. So the only one left is the one that NASA's been fooling around with for decades now. I think it's, this one is XL, so I guess it's... That would make it, what, the 40th flight? I thought they had more than that. But Pegasus does work. They'll drop it from the, And then they'll ignite the engines and off they go to actual orbit. Any comments before I move on? WS-1.
WB-2BX, so forth.
Frank, WB2BXO, and you sound very good, by the way. WS2N.
Well, I'm coming through Echo Link. Maybe that has something to do with it. In any case, so is this one of these space tug concepts that they're launching from an L-1011 jet? The docks with the Earth satellite to boost it, is that the idea?
Yeah, that's the idea. And, this has been around for... I should have looked it up. It seems like decades now. If I'm not mistaken, I think they were around in the 1990s. Back to you, Brian.
I did not know. I know there's been some experimentation with the space tugs. I forget who's been doing that. I did not know there was one that's actually operational. Maybe the difference is that this is an LEO space tug for reboosting satellites, and the newer concept is to get them up to GEO and be able to refuel the GEOs and keep them in position and operating a few more years. So maybe there are a couple of different concepts out there. Go ahead.
For some reason I'm keyed here. They need to save this Hubble telescope. It was a $500 million observatory, and they really don't want to lose it. So we'll see. I just thought tonight, so yeah, I always thought they were pretty much finished. It's built by Northrop Grumman, and we'll see. Swift has been up there since 2004, and we'll see. I'll report on it next week. I did see a picture of the craft. You know, they have the front open, installing the payload and all. Wallops Island. So I'm assuming, well, that's where it is now, Wallops Island, Virginia. I'm assuming the L-1011 is going to leave from there. You know, they have the capability of leaving from pretty much anywhere. So, they've launched from Florida, they've launched from California. I don't remember if they've ever launched from Wallops before. So we'll look into it, Brian. But back to you.
Okay, yeah, the Pegasus, now I recognize the Pegasus. I know it's been around quite a while. I did not know they had one that could boost satellites. But I remember the Pegasus. I remember hearing about it in the 1990s, as you said. I think at the time they were launching... somebody, I would assume NASA, was launching Pegasus using the B-52 as a launch platform. I think NASA has one of those, of course. B-52s are not exactly available on the open market. So I guess the Pegasus has been adapted to launch from L-1011, since there's certainly more of those available than B-52, and certainly less control over who can use one. Go ahead.
It was the B-52s in the early days, and then they switched over to the L-1011. And by the way, this L-1011, they claim, is the only one left that's flying. And NASA and Jet Propulsion Laboratory are the ones using it. And ones behind it, though, are Northrop Grumman. So it's their baby. You know. Real nice jumbo jet. I guess they couldn't compete with 747, so they all went away except for this one.
I remember seeing a rumor, I think on YouTube a couple of years ago, that Ukraine had one that they were rumored to be converting into a strategic bomber. But either that's just plain not true, or they decided to do strategic bombing, go with drones and missiles instead, and just the expense and risk of trying to use a B-52 as a subsonic strategic bomber was just not worth it. Go ahead.
Okay, really. If anybody could convert something like that, they could probably do it in the Ukraine. I mean, they're going nuts with all their high technology, with thousands of these drones they're making, and different kinds of drones. They're flying them. They have drones in the water, and so, you know. I haven't read that. If there was one around, They would make good use of it, I'm sure. Those people are really incredible.
Yeah, as I said, I saw something about it on YouTube a couple of years ago when the war started, and then that story kind of disappeared. So whether Ukraine made the story disappear for obvious reasons or whether it just wasn't true, I don't know. But you're right. If anybody could do it, they can. You know, they've obviously been way underestimated. And I think there are people now scrambling to show that they've been supporting Ukraine all along now that it looks like Ukraine's going to win or at least what's a favorable agreement with Russia. Anyway, that's kind of beyond the scope of what you're doing. The Pegasus, new Pegasus project does sound really interesting, though. Watching, by the way, I don't know if you've taken a look at it. You know, the space opera For All Mankind ended, but has a spin-off called Star City, which kind of looks at the same alternate history from the Russian space program side. So Franny and I just started watching that, and it's kind of interesting. If you're into space opera, go ahead.
Yeah, I remember hearing about that years ago, but I don't get that. I think that, I don't know if it's on Apple or one of those that I don't get. But, you know, I've read about it, the idea of what would have happened if the Russians got to the moon first, and they changed everything, and, you know, I spent years trying to try to memorize all the things that really happened. If I start watching that, I'm gonna conflate the two, and I'll be talking about something that never happened. Probably back to you, Brian.
No, it's kind of hard to confuse their alternate history with real history. Some of the alternate political history in the background is kind of amusing, though. That is fun, where different people become president, where Ted Kennedy never drives a Mary Jo off the bridge and eventually becomes president and gets his first lady. That's a really amusing alternate political history in the background of For All Mankind. And yes, that is an Apple show. So yeah, Franny really enjoys the screening channel, streaming channel. So we have a bunch of them. Go ahead.
Yeah, my daughter has it over at her house, and they had a documentary on years ago dealing with the Opportunity rover that spent 14 years riding around on Mars. Excellent, you know, very, very good documentary, all about the history of it. Very well done. So, you know, I did go over there to watch that. You know. Okay, one of these days they'll put it on another service or something. I have enough of them, you know, between the Netflix and all this other stuff. I'm not going to sign up with another one. I just wanted to talk about the Ukraine 1 second. You know, before Russia and Ukraine, you know, separated, you know, the Soviet Union was dissolved, Ukraine was the primary builder of a lot of these rockets. They helped build the Zenit rocket, which launched many times. In fact, they used to launch that off a barge in the water. Then they were the primary builders of the RS-180 engines, which were eventually, you know, a lot of them were sold to the United States, and we had countless RS-180 engines from then the Soviet Union, which they were really being made in Ukraine here in the United States. So we've been using them for, let's see, we've launched over 100 Atlas V rockets. Atlas V rockets, each one uses RS-180 engines. So those things are extremely reliable, very well built, and Ukraine was the main manufacturer, I believe, for most of the parts that were on that thing, on that engine. We're still using it today. You know, Atlas is still launching. They have, I think, maybe four or five launches left to go before they retire that rocket entirely. The reason they're retiring it is they don't have any more RS-180 engines. So, yeah, they were a real powerhouse for Russia at the time. So to think that those people don't have the capabilities to take care of themselves, I think Putin was really misguided. Back to you, Frank. WS2N.
Okay, looks like we're back. Whatever was the king disappeared. Yeah, I think the... I think the Russians bombed the rocket factory in Ukraine a couple of years ago in the war. They also destroyed, I think, the Antonov P-25. So the Ukrainians said that they would recreate it once the war ended. No question Ukraine's going to take over as the world power. What's going to happen to Russia remains to be seen. But I don't think it looks too good for them as a country. Go ahead.
Yeah. You always read what's going on, and they're hanging in there. That's for sure. What Russians are, from what I see, they're in big trouble. I just wanted to talk about the Ariane 6-4 that's going to be launched from French Guiana. Let me bring this one up for a quick report. Ariane 6-4 is a rocket. Well, it's called Ariane 6, really. Ariane 6 comes from the Ariane family. They had the Ariane 3, and then they had the 4 that was successful, and then for years, I think they launched around 80 of them, were the Ariane 5 rockets. Ariane 5 is one of those, one of the rockets that put the James Webb Space Telescope into the L2 orbit. But, you know, that thing has been retired, and they came up with the Ariane 6. And they've flown 4 times successfully. It's a rocket that's, you know, built by ESA, European Space Agency, and flown out of South America, French Guiana. Kourou is the area in that country. And that's where European Space Agency has built quite a few launch complexes there. In fact, they had one for the Soyuz rocket. They used to buy the Soyuz, a whole thing from Russia. Russia helped build a special launch in French Guiana, and they used to launch Soyuz rockets, but because of the war, European Space Agency cut themselves off from Russia 100%. So that facility is not being used anymore. But they do have a heavy lift vehicle called the Ariane 6, and it's flown a couple of times with these boosters. These are liquid hydrogen, liquid oxygen boosters that help put the thing into space. You know, they mount to the side of the rocket. It kind of looks like the shuttle version, you know, or the new STS, you know, that NASA is launching to the moon with people. So this is much more powerful. They say less expensive to build than the Ariane 5. So now they're coming out with these boosters that are attaching that set of two of them, four of them. But, you know, they used to have one on the port side, one on the starboard side, top side, bottom side. Now, you know, four of them, they're taking one more step further and increasing the size of these boosters of the, you know, a copy of this launch when it goes off in a few days on the 17th. And the payload, payload's an interesting payload because Amazon is paying them for this launch. Amazon needs to put 3,200 satellites into orbit, and they need to do it quickly within probably a year or so. Whether they make that timeline, I don't think so, but they're trying. They'll probably get an extension from the government. There's a rush for them to do that. They have reserved these frequencies that they're going to use for their broadband satellites. So they have over 300 satellites up there now, and they need to eventually get up to a couple of thousand. One of the planned launches for these satellites was going to be a couple of weeks ago, right when New Glenn blew up. The next launch was going to be Amazon satellites. New Glenn had a heavy lift vehicle, had a capability of putting up a little over 40 of those things. So European Space Agency, not to be outdone, they've increased the size of the boosters. They're getting a lot more thrust out of their Ariane 6 rocket. They're calling it the Ariane 6-4, but this is like an extended or bigger diameter booster that they've developed. So they're going to have a lot more thrust on this heavy lift vehicle. They're going to put up 36 satellites for Amazon. So it's a step in the right direction for them, and naturally they would like to, you know, keep doing this. They've got contracts with a bunch of providers, including themselves, New Glenn. Of course, that's going to be a long time before they can launch after that blew up on the launch pad. They've launched quite a few already on the Atlas V rocket that I just mentioned with the old Russian engines. They still have a couple more launches contracted with them. And then they have, they've paid SpaceX to get some of their satellites up into space. Their direct competitor, but, you know, SpaceX will take their money. And, Vulcan is, they're gonna have the capability of launching at least 40 of these things at a time. Vulcan is a powerful heavy lift rocket. You know, they have the capability of attaching these two solid booster rockets attached to Vulcan, which has flown a couple of times. But they can increase that number. They could actually, I believe they could go up to six solid boosters attached. When they finally get their act together, the boosters are being produced by Northrop Grumman, and so far on two of their flights, and I think they've launched, you know, just four times. They've had issues with the nozzle, you know, coming apart during launch, and I thought they had a resolve, but then, you know, their last flight they had a problem. So once they get the okay to start flying, that rocket has the capability of launching quite a bit. You know, it's not reusable, not yet anyway. They plan on reusing the engines in the future. But for now, it's an expendable rocket. And Vulcan should be ready to go within another month or two, I would say. Once they get the clearance, they need to make sure that the rocket engines are not a problem. The Vulcan uses the same identical engine that New Glenn is using. New Glenn, the one I blew up, they were doing a wet dress rehearsal, to, you know, testing the engines when that thing blew. And what that amounts to is they light up the engine on a launch pad and they don't let it go. It's, you know, attached and they'll fire it for like 10 seconds. Of course, last time it didn't work out, the whole thing blew up. These engines are called BE-4 engines. They run on liquid natural gas, LNG, and of course, liquid oxygen. So Vulcan is the same thing. So if the fault is with one of these engines, that could delay future Vulcan flights as well. The Vulcan uses two engines for flight. New Glenn, which is a bigger rocket, uses seven BE-4 engines at a time. So they need to figure out, you know, when this thing blew up, was it a failure in the engine itself? Which I don't think it was. I think it was probably the piping and things going to the engine. But only time will tell. I don't have a final answer on what caused New Glenn to blow up. You know, now they got to rebuild that launch pad, which, you know, that could probably take a year. Any comments or questions? This is WS2N for the Space Net Report.
WB2BS. The audio problem may have been on my end. In any case, this does not sound good for getting moon landers for Artemis anytime soon. Starship isn't ready, and it looks like New Glenn's going to be offline for at least a year. Go ahead.
Yeah, I agree. You have a new crew, and Jared Isaacman is chosen for the next Artemis 3 mission. If you think back, the original plans, things should have been moving along. Artemis 3 was going to be the first Artemis mission to actually land on the moon. That was their early plan. And they had this whole thing with this halo orbit, you know, this rectilinear halo orbit they were going to use. This whole complex way of going about it, you know, for the last couple of years, their plan was to launch Artemis with Orion out to lunar orbit, and it was supposed to meet up with one or two rockets. This is the latest plan. So they were going to launch and dock with either Starship or dock with New Glenn lander, whichever one was ready first. They were going to take it down to the moon, come back up, dock with Orion, and come back home. That, you know, that was the latest plan as of, like, I don't know, right before everything started going bad with what happened with after what's his name, Isaacman got involved with. As the NASA administrator. Now, before he was NASA administrator, they had another plan. Let's have a Gateway space station, which sounded great. I mean, they had hardware built and everything. Billions of dollars already invested in this thing. They're going to put a space station in orbit around the moon. The plan was, again, to launch SDS with Orion all the way out to the moon. And it would have docked with the space station, which sounded like a good idea to me. And they would have hung out there for a while, and because you could stay on the space station pretty much as long as you want, as long as you have food, oxygen, and all, you know. And they got real good experience with the International Space Station on doing something like that, and power. And they had two of the modules built, the power and propulsion unit, and the habitat unit. why they're trashing that. Well, I have my own reasons why they're doing that, but they're trashing that whole idea of Gateway. Now, they would have been in Gateway, and they would have, the Gateway would have docked with either one of the two human landing systems, either New Glenn or Starship, whichever one was ready first. Originally, it was supposed to be Starship. And that vehicle was supposed to go down to the moon, come back up, dock with Gateway, and everybody transfers back to Orion, and then they fly home and land safely in the Pacific Ocean. And those vehicles that go down to the moon and back and forth are supposed to be reusable. To use them over and over again, that means they have to be refueled. And it's all a complex thing that was planned is now out the window. Originally, they wanted to do this all before 2028, which, you know, before the, you have a different administration come in. And apparently, they would still like to do that. So they keep cutting costs. They're cutting quarters now. They've done away with Gateway. Now they've done away with, well, they were forced to do away with Artemis 3 because Starship isn't ready, and now the lunar lander by Jeff Bezos, Blue Origin, is also not ready. So now they've come up with, well, let's duplicate Apollo 9. You know, Apollo 7, when that went up, you had three guys go up in orbit. Just make sure the vehicle was working, everything was okay. Came back after 10 days. Then they launched Apollo 8, and that went out to the moon, around the moon. In fact, they orbited the moon for 10 orbits, and then they deorbited, came back to Earth. And then, of course, you had, before you got to Apollo 11, you had Apollo 9 and Apollo 10. Apollo 9 just orbited the Earth. The idea was, let's make sure the Apollo spacecraft and the lander, which is the LEM, built by, again, Grumman at the time, not Northrop Grumman, which Grumman here on Long Island, they launched together on an Apollo mission. They separated in orbit. They turned around and was able to dock with one another. And then eventually they separated from one another and flew hundreds of miles away from one another. And eventually they returned and just checked out the LEM, a complete LEM, you know, completely built and docked with the Apollo. So now they're going to use Artemis 3, which was eventually supposed to be the first one to go to the moon. They're going to use it for an orbital Earth mission.
Sam.
Hello. Go ahead. Who's
that? Yeah, we're for break. KC1SAM. When you do the long, unbroken transmission, something like what you just did but a few minutes ago, it times out the Middle Island repeater. I was listening on there, tuning around, I heard you. I thought for some reason it was the space report. And then it just cuts out. So it I don't know why it doesn't time out on whatever repeater you're going into, but for some reason it times out the Middle Island repeater and I lose you. That's the easiest one for me to listen to.
Oh, yeah. You're on 70 centimeters, Middle Island, is that true?
So right now I'm on a base unit. I'm going into Selden. But let's say I'm listening inside, I'll take the portable. And I'll tune in every now and then to see if, the Siegfried and Roy show is on or if you're talking. And when I heard you, I listened for a while. And it's happened before, too. It times out. And I finally realized what it is. I thought my portable was a problem. But the repeater itself just times out for some reason.
Yeah. Okay, Sam. Good to hear from you, by the way. And the computer. I'm going through, I'm going through Selden. But I know Middle Island has had its issues in the past. So, you know, I'll let them know that tomorrow, unfortunately. So you know, if you're on Selden, you don't have a problem. You don't lose me on Selden.
Oh, no. Came here to turn the bass unit on, and I could hear you fine. But the Middle Island, like I said, drops out. Yeah, we haven't talked in a while. Good to hear you, too, my friend. I won't keep you. I won't interrupt, but I just want to pass that along to you, just so you know. Yeah, I guess you probably should pass along to someone tomorrow. But very good talking to you, Paul.
Yeah, Sam. And, thanks for the report. I'm on here early. Roy had some issues, and I'm not sure what the issues are, but his transmission got worse and worse as time went on, and he became inaudible. So, at some point I was able to hear him tell me that, and we did that quite early. I think it was a little after, I don't know. I didn't look at the time, but definitely up to 9 o'clock. We'll try to hang in here as long as possible to continue with this long SpaceNet report. thanks for getting in there, Sam.
You deserve the extra time because you usually get cut pretty good. I tune in, like I said, I listen a quarter after. I don't get to 10:30 sometimes, and sometimes after that. So they steal time from you all the time, my friend. But this time you're getting even. Anyway, I'm going to throw a throw here, so I'm going to go. Great chat. KC1SM, I'll be clear. WS2N, you got it.
Okay. Very good, yeah. Well, I guess we're the late night part of the TechNet. You know, they got rid of Colbert, but they're not going to get rid of yeah. All right. So anybody listening on Middle Island, sorry guys, but you know, we'll try to work through it. We'll report to the powers to be tomorrow. Maybe they could work on it. So okay. What was I talking about? The flight to the moon has pretty much been canceled. It became Artemis 3. Artemis 3 is now a duplicate of Apollo 9. They plan on launching these four guys. They picked them last week. They have Randy Bresnik. He's got the all-time record for an American staying in space at one time. He sent him up there for like a year plus, I think. And they're going to send him up on the next mission. They'll be the commander. You have a pilot, Luca Pamataro. He's a European Space Agency guy. He's been up a couple of times to the space station. In fact, he even commanded the space station for a while. But his claim to fame was the astronaut who was doing an EVA that almost drowned in space on the International Space Station. He was the guy where there was leaking water in his spacesuit, and, you know, it's floating around, it's no gravity. It got into his helmet, and, get worse and worse, to the point where he's trying to push the water away with his head, moving it around and all. Naturally, that mission that was definitely aborted. And he was out there with somebody else, and they eventually got back to the space station, into the Quest lab, and he got inside, and they tried to do it as quick as possible, because, you know, time was ticking away, and this water kept, you know, hitting his nose. He could have actually drowned in space, but they did it as quick as possible. It takes a long time to get into the space station. First of all, he had trouble seeing because of all the water. He had to work his way back to the Quest lab. then eventually the two of them had to get the door closed, then they depressurized everything, or repressurized everything. And then they were able to actually get his helmet off as quick as possible. And they found out the leak was, apparently coming from his